Welcome to this episode of Real Space Strategy. I'm your host, Christopher Stone, Senior Fellow for Space Deterrence and Warfighting at the National Institute for Deterrence Studies in Washington, D.C. Real Space Strategy exists to provide you, the listener, a reality check on U.S. space policy and strategy, while giving you insight into the processes required to achieve a credible deterrent and warfighting posture for the United States Space Force. The views expressed by the host and guests in Real Space Strategy are those of the host and guests and are not to be attributed or considered part of any government entity or private sector company. Since at least the 1820s, the United States' relationship with South American nations has been an important part of our nation's foreign defense and economic policy. The U.S. and its partners to the South have partnered together on technology developments such as maritime, air travel, and other areas. And as mentioned in previous episodes of this podcast, dedicated to such topics as the Panama Canal, the Alcantara launch site near the equator in Brazil, among other developments, the strategic partnership with our major non-NATO allies in South America continues apace. And in this episode of the podcast, we'll be looking at the perspectives of several of these South American countries with regards to the growth of space capabilities and agreements in the Southern Hemisphere. And to discuss this, I would like to welcome a longtime friend and colleague in the space policy world and someone with great insight into South America and space, Laura Delgado Lopez. So great to have you with us, Laura. Good to see you again.
Good to see you, Chris. Thank you for having me.
Awesome. Well, to get things going, if you want to add a little bit about yourself, feel free with this question. But to start, why should space strategists and policymakers in D.C. care about South America? What about South America should garner the attention of these folks?
Sure. And actually, I can find a way to weave that in. So I have been in the space policy community in the Washington, D.C. area for the last 15 years. And I started to be curious about space in not just South America, but the entire Latin America region, including the Caribbean and Central America. When I was in graduate school, I went to the George Washington University Space Policy Institute. And I remember at the beginning thinking, oh, I'm not going to study that. I'm going to find some other topic just because I don't want to take the quote unquote easy route by studying the region that I come from. I'm from the Caribbean, from Puerto Rico, as you know. And so for a bit of time there, I was avoiding this topic. And then at some point it dawned on me, you know, the region matters on its own, whether I pay attention to it or not. And so I decided to kind of just forgive myself for being interested and just really delve into the topic, because the truth is there's very little that's known really here in the DC space community. And as I've found through my last few years doing research on these topics, in other parts of the world, there's a lot of interest, but for a number of reasons, and some of them include, you know, language limitations, et cetera, it's just not as well studied. So I think that's the first point, is the region matters in a lot of different respects, right? And so the question is more, how is it relevant for the issues that you as an analyst or a strategist care about, right? And there's a number of layers there. And so I'll touch on a couple. As a space policy or strategies person, you know, you are aware, of course, of guidance and policy that has come out in the last few years, such as, for example, the U.S. Space Diplomacy Framework, that calls for the U.S. to diversify its partnerships, right? Some of that stems from some of the consequences of the war in Ukraine, changing relationships with Russia, et cetera, but also from this idea that the U.S. was building coalitions with like-minded nations to advance, you know, American values and priorities in the exploration of space, right? And so in that, you find that the region has actually a lot of like-minded nations, nations that share the same values and that share a lot of the same priorities when it comes to, you know, why we explore space and what are the important values to take out there. And then if you take two or three steps back, and that's a big feature of the work I do, you put space in context. Well, you know, if you think about the challenges, shared challenges that we have here in the whole Western Hemisphere, you know, migration or illicit drugs and the effects of natural disasters and deforestation and climate change and all those things, well, then the countries in the region are both, involved and suffering a lot of the consequences of these events, but they're also going to be really critical in their solution. And as I'm sure you've talked about here in the podcast, space is absolutely central to a lot of the solutions tied to some of these challenges. And so it also matters to understand the developments related to space in the region from that standpoint, from the standpoint of, I think, some of the issues that are really capturing the headlines every day in the region.
Yeah, so I think I mentioned to you before in my National Guard military side of life, a couple of years ago, I got to go down to South America, and do some partner work with on the space side of things. We went down to Peru, so we stayed mostly out of Lima, and we operated out of a ground station in a town called Pucasana, which is just southeast of Lima, in the middle of nowhere. It's a kind of a deserty area right on the Pacific Ocean. Very nice facility. And there were people from just about every major non-NATO ally there. Brazil, obviously, Ecuador, Peru. I think everybody was there with the exception of Argentina. And that was before their presidential election kind of changed the relationship between Argentina and the United States. And one thing that I found was that all those folks, whether it was the Peruvian civilian side of space, which they had their PeruSat operations center in the same building we were using for our operations center. And then, of course, we had some folks in Colombia with some electronic warfare, space electronic warfare assets, and some other fun stuff. And one thing that I found is that a lot of these folks were very, very interested in learning how to leverage space for military purposes and for civil purposes. One of the main areas that they were talking a lot about was monitoring Amazon. And I know you mentioned the drug thing, and that obviously is one of the issues with the Amazon, that that thing is that's a humongous rainforest that has a lot of borders sharing with other countries, and just the fact that they were so into that. So why do you think our friends in South America are engaging in space with the United States, and wanting to learn all these skill sets? Is it strictly just for monitoring things like the Amazon? And fishing and things of that sort off the coast, which is another thing I might mention later, or is there other reasons?
I think it's all of those, right? It's what's really interesting, and I talk a lot about this in my work. In the United States, we're used to the rationales for space. Even while we highlight all the practical benefits that we get, we tend to talk about space more for the prestige aspects and for the sort of emotional side of why space is important and inspirational and all that. And you see in the region and in other parts of the world, but in the region really strongly, that there's almost an intentional de-emphasis of that to really focus on the practical benefits. And so in that case, they point to the United States, of course, as a model. They also point to other countries like India, which I find really interesting, countries in Europe, et cetera, to show these are the types of benefits, concrete benefits that these countries have garnered because of their investment in space. And so, you mentioned a few of that practical applications. Food security is a big concern in the region. And so the ability to use satellite imagery in particular and other geospatial technologies to make better decisions about that is an area of interest. So there's a number of kind of concrete applications, disaster management, et cetera, that we can go into. But another area that's really important and that kind of ties into this theme is the ability to retain talent. So, countries in the region, of course, have a significant concern over brain drain, and how, economic challenges, political challenges, et cetera, sometimes drive really, really, educated and extremely capable people to seek employment in other countries. And so investing in advanced capabilities within their nation is a way to create opportunities for that. And then the third one I'll highlight just because it's relatively recent, but as part of the new space kind of theme is this idea of, okay, we can create kind of a vibrant ecosystem of startups and, private enterprises that will help us bring in some foreign investment and create some economic opportunity. So I mean, the three kind of categories all have their challenges, but I think it's really important to know that it's really tied to national development. It's a lot less of a power projection tool. It's more about, okay, how does investing a dollar in space basically come back to our nation and to our economies?
Yeah, I'll mention an area where it does kind of overlap, at least the thing that I personally experienced with. One of the things we were doing down there with U.S. Southern Command, and obviously our host was both a Peruvian Air Force space operations people, which is brand new. And so I was the commander of the coalition group, but then my peer, my co-commander was a Peruvian Air Force lieutenant colonel, very nice guy. And then, of course, my American counterpart in Colombia, which I handed over control to when most of us went back home, he had a Colombian guy on his side. And then we had a bunch of other people, for, like I mentioned, from other countries. Well, in addition to learning how to do the more traditional national security, defense of the country, how to use space for that, we also had a situation that actually. We got to show how these commercially available tools that we were showing them that they could have access to as being a partner with U.S. Space Command, some of their commercial space operations efforts was that we could track shipping off the coast of Peru. And of course, one of the big issues that I learned about was fishing issues where Chinese vessels come in, become ghost ships, where they turn off their satellite tracking devices and kind of build this big pile of sensing, reflections, so that you can't tell that one ship has escaped and is then taking squid and other things that the Peruvian economy is very dependent upon for their well-being, and basically robbing them. So they're not paying the Peruvians what they should be for fishing rights. And so they're basically robbing the Peruvians, and there are other countries that this happens to. And then, of course, other issues. And so we were able to use AIS and other tracking systems to help them track where all these ships had come and gone and be able to vector in Peruvian Air Force and Coast Guard to try to locate these ships and find out which ones they were, to hold them accountable. And that was sort of a real world thing that we kind of connected into that. And so when you mentioned food security, that was one of the things that came to my mind is, yeah, it's a sovereignty issue, it's a national defense issue, but it also has to do with an economic issue. And so I wasn't sure if with that you had had any experience with some of that activity in your research or in some of your work when you travel. Have you seen anything about that in other countries besides Peru, or is that just probably more of a Peruvian issue?
I think I've seen it in other cases. As you were talking, I was thinking of in Brazil, there's a concept of blue Amazon. And so it's like this idea that, of course, the Amazon is like the heart of Brazil. As you mentioned earlier, the Amazon is, of course, shared by multiple countries. Nine countries have some extent of territory in the Amazon, but Brazil's is the largest. And so it's absolutely central to its economic and in many ways, political development, right? And so I li really like that concept of the Blue Amazon as okay, this core priority extends also to the ocean. And so it's both a strategic concept in terms of, more defense oriented and some of the applications that you were talking about, but it's also civil economic. And so, that focus is, for example, what motivated a really interesting project that I focused a little bit on my research. Where Brazil and Argentina are collaborating on two satellites that are going to do ocean monitoring. And the applications for those satellites are going to be dual use. So, definitely of benefit to both civil and defense applications. So, I think the examples like that abound. Space is very much quite openly dual use in the region. You do have certain countries that have dedicated civilian space agency and a dedicated, sp national security space effort. But the heritage of space activities in the region really comes from the military, right? It started in the 60s. And so you still see that a lot of the expertise and often a lot of the kind of decisions are still made by military actors. So you were talking about Peru. Peru is the Peruvian Space Agency is nested under the Ministry of Defense, right? And so even though, you know, the activities are could be of a civilian nature, it's still kind of under the military structure, right? And that is the case with several other countries in the region.
So just to follow up, you mentioned the phrase "Blue Amazon," and maybe I missed what you were saying. Is Blue Amazon essentially where the concern of the Amazon is not just the Amazon forest, but into the ocean? So they're considering the ocean to be part of their concern area as well. Is that what you meant by that?
And I'll, you know, look it up after we talk, of course, but it is a strategic concept in terms of their territory and kind of core territory. So it's the Amazon, the trees, but it's also how it extends, you know, into their you know, their economic zone of activity in the ocean.
Got it. So I know one. There's one other point that you made earlier. I don't want to pass up a question on. Is you mentioned about how folks with any space knowledge or experience in some of these South American countries are kind of aging out, you said, and that I did see that myself with at least a couple of the countries that a few of these officers were in the aerospace sector. Some of them had worked in Canada and the United States for some of our companies. But down in their home countries, and then they were recalled to active duty by their governments because of their expertise to help build up the knowledge base in their countries, whether it be for Earth observation. So they have sort of a NOAA slash NRO kind of combined organization in Argentina, for example. And then, of course, there's similar entities that are strictly military, like you said, in other countries. But they were talking about how, I mean, these guys were not young folks that were being recalled. Some of these guys were pushing 60, if not over 60. And a lot of the guys that we had in training from these countries were obviously really young guys in their 20s and 30s. So they're the exercise was not just an exercise in partnership, but it was also sort of a training opportunity for these guys to get some experience with some of the tool sets and some of the knowledge base. Is that something that you think has been resolved over the last few years because of these efforts, or is this an issue that'll take decades to fix?
It's getting better, I would say, but it's still a challenge. And you talk about some of the things that partners teach each other in joint exercises and in activities of a collaborative nature. One area that I've written about that I would love to see more collaboration is particularly on the institutional side, and not just, you know, creating an agency, but thinking through some of the challenges like the one you just brought up. So an institution gives expertise a home, and so it can give opportunities to people that, for example, in a given country like Brazil, they may be doing space if they're in the military, they're in the Air Force. Perhaps they may be doing space on rotation for 2 years, and then they have a new assignment and they move on to something else. Well, I've also seen that in the diplomatic corps, right? And so, with few exceptions, and there are a few, you know, really well-known experts in the region that have done space for several decades. You do get a lot of these young, passionate diplomats who suddenly land on the space portfolio, but they know very little about the challenges, and so they find it difficult to navigate, you know, the complex world of space governance and international norms and all that thing. And so, you know, fortunately, there are now more resources to help them get up to speed, but it is then potentially a loss when they again move on to a different post or something like that. And so I think to your point of one, you know, this I describe it as a not very sexy topic, but absolutely critical is institutional bridges, institutions, period, that have the resources, and I mean people, money, infrastructure, et cetera, to actually, you know, create and sustain that expertise. You need that at the national level, but then also the regional level too, because I think there's a lot of shared experiences in the region that exist in specific pockets, right? For example, space law is surprisingly really rich and deep in the region, and so that community is very well tied in. But I haven't seen that in other communities, and so when I think about how some of the countries you were talking about, say, are collaborating more with the U.S. and with each other on space situational awareness exercises, et cetera, I would love for there to be a little bit more thought on, okay, how do we maintain that expertise, not just in those individuals, but like you were saying, can they train other people and can that be somehow institutionalized so it's not lost?
Yeah, so I guess one of the other things I got to do is we, the Space Southern Command folks that are now starting to stand up their own component that's actually dedicated on the U.S. side to working space issues in the South. We had worked on sort of a lexicon, sort of a terms of reference, which was one of my ideas because everyone wanted to jump, dive headfirst into, oh, we need to have a unified doctrine. And I'm like, well, okay, before we get into that, why don't we all decide on what the vocabulary is so we all can speak the same language? Because in Brazil, for example, a lot of their language comes from air terminology, whereas Peru and Colombia weren't so necessarily wedded to that. And there were others that just wanted to cut and paste whatever ours said and just change United States to Peru or whatever country was, you fill in the blank. And so I was trying to get them to do that. And so our training wasn't just about how to use systems and how to, do that, but also what are our procedures to talk. And I think you mentioned institutions. One of the things I'll mention, I did ask a couple of the folks down in South America, and I don't remember which countries they were, but it was more than one. And I said, "What about the Organization of American States?" I mean, obviously, that's the regional, institution for discussing various diplomatic and political issues, even security issues. Going back as far back, even as the Cuban Missile Crisis, obviously they were a big part of that. And a lot of them said, "Oh, they really don't really play a lot in our decisions with regard to space discussions or partnerships with other of our friends around South America." And I was curious about that. I don't know if you have an answer to that or if you know why OAS is kind of not as important, and if there's and why there's not a space subcommittee like there is with other international organizations like ICAO and UN and all that kind of stuff. Is there a reason for that in your viewpoint?
Yeah, so I think you're it's almost like you read my paper and are prompting me to kind of revisit it. But this is a paper I wrote summarizing the research I did while as a visiting fellow at the Center for Strategic and International Studies Americas program. And I was looking at this question of international cooperation, and one of my examples, one of my case studies, was ALCE, the Latin American and Caribbean Space Agency. But to explain again, space isn't the beginning of the question ever, right? So to explain the evolution of this concept of the Latin American Space Agency, I needed to really go back and really understand, okay, what are the regional forums for the region? And one of the things that experts in Latin America will tell you is that very different from other regions of the world, of course, Europe or even Africa, is that the region has really struggled with having a single primary dedicated forum to develop consensus. Lots of reasons for that we probably don't have time to get into, but one of them is, sovereignty is a big concern for a region that has, suffered from a lot of foreign intervention over the decades, right? And so when you participate in a group, you have to give up a degree of your sovereignty, right? So that Because that's how you reach consensus, build trust, et cetera. And so that is a very simplified element into this answer of why there's never really been a central forum that has lasted and that retains that authority. So you mentioned OAS. OAS is very well respected and is a forum, a primary forum. It's not the other one. It's not the only one, excuse me. There's also CELAC. Which is another forum that is actually where the space agency was born, and it does not include Canada or the United States. But it's not the only one. There's also some that wax and wane in South America only or in Central America. And so it's a complex topic, but I will finish with the thought that when I was doing research for my particular look at the Latin American Space Agency, I saw this reference that said at any one point you have 20 or 30 regional groups, right? And so of course, they have different levels of impact depending on the issue. And on space, yes, the Latin American Space Agency, and we can talk more about that if you have questions. But I would say there's actually other regional forums that aren't not as visible, but are very important. So one example is under the umbrella of the Group on Earth Observations, which is a multilateral organization that seeks to promote the use of Earth observations. And they have these regional bodies, and there's one for America, AmeriGeo, and countries in the region are very, very active in that, and it helps with capacity building and technical exchange, et cetera. So I think it's a little bit more complex than we sometimes think, but it is striking, and I definitely shared your surprise when I was like, okay, obviously, if you think about shared challenges like security or disaster management that OAS cares about, space is going to have a role. And no, I agree. It hasn't really quite made it to the agenda there.
Yeah, so I one thing that I noticed, and I don't know if you agree with this or not, but observing how the different countries in Southcom area kind of behave with each other and who takes the lead. I know you mentioned sovereignty. It seems it kind of reminds me of Europe in the sense. So like you've got in Europe, you've got the French and the Germans and the British are sort of the top three that throw their weight around and try to kind of, shape things, whether it's from the European Space Agency side or the European Union side or just from the state of leading, this is the way forward. So you got the French who are big into the political control, you've got the Germans who are into the financial side, and then the British are interested in just about everything else that's not included in those two things. But in South America, you've got, rising great powers like Brazil and other countries that either have more resources than some of the other countries, and so as with any strategic or political forum, whoever has the most resources usually has the most weight and influence to throw things around. So I was curious what your thoughts were. Who's kind of leading the way with regards to space capabilities as a country? And then also as a continental, consortium or partnership between other countries in South America. Is there one, or is everyone still kind of in the same level?
They're not in the same level, but I would say it really depends how you slice it. One of the topics I've had a lot of fun kind of talking about and writing about is really pushing back a little bit on just thinking about space development and maturity as a question of hardware, right? And other people have been doing this too, which is a welcome change, because there's other aspects that are so important to having a successful space program, right? We talked about institutionalization earlier. Sometimes the fact that decisions are made in one forum that may seem inconsistent with the other is just a matter of agencies not talking to each other rather than necessarily a change of policy. The other one is diplomatic activity. And again, we think of space as you know, I've spent a lot of time kind of studying governance and the development of shared norms. The region punches above its weight in that realm. And so I'll get to that in a second. But yes, let's talk with a classical. Let's start with a classical. So in terms of infrastructure and capability, the undisputed leaders are Brazil and Argentina. So folks may know Brazil and may remember, as you mentioned earlier, the Alcantara Launch Center, 2 degrees removed from the equator. So of course, kind of prime real estate for certain launches if you're going to low Earth orbit. But it also has extensive capability and a pretty large private sector. They have mastered what they describe as the satellite development cycle. So they've developed satellites from payload bus end to end, short of actually launching it, although that's something that's always been of interest. But that is significant capability, right? And the same with Argentina. Argentina have not only mastered that, some of their capabilities are very advanced. So I'll give you an example. There's two satellites called SAOCOM, and these are L-band radar satellites, and they're actually part of a coordinated constellation with Italy. different band, but also a radar satellite. And so together they help with a number of disaster management applications. But these satellites were fully developed in Argentina. And so I think that's something that maybe people aren't as aware of. And so, you know, when you think about kind of hard capability, both of the countries are the leaders. You think of other niche, or maybe not niche, but narrower set of capabilities, but still extensive. You get, I think, Peru, who you mentioned, but also Chile, Mexico. And then you get some of the newer players that, you know, maybe the universities develop small satellites. And so they're starting to take those steps. So I think there's a lot more technical capability than people think of sometimes. But then just to, you know, emphasize the point I brought up earlier in terms of this diplomatic role, you see leaders in the region taking, having real impact when it comes to international governance conversations. So, you know, I was recently reading a manuscript about this Argentinian lawyer who was really instrumental and really the central author of what became the Moon Treaty. Which is something I didn't know enough about, but was really fascinating to learn. And just much more recently, you know, under the UN umbrella, there's been a number of multilateral working groups and committees set up to try to advance some sort of global agreement on space security threats and solutions to them. And, you know, one of them, the something called the Open-Ended Working Group, was chaired by a Chilean diplomat. One of the current ones that just got started is chaired by Argentina. I mean, that is significant, right? Like, you wouldn't do that. You wouldn't give those significant, very visible roles to countries that don't know anything of what they're talking about, right? But I think it speaks to some of these countries and some of these experts are really seen as true diplomats, in the sense that they can really help the international community navigate conversations that have become really contentious of late.
Yeah. So as we're getting close to the end here, I wanted to throw out one more question that kind of dovetails off of some of that. And I have my own opinion, so I'll probably close out with some of mine if you don't mention them yourself. But what are some of the benefits of strategic cooperation with our major non-NATO allies? And for those that are not sure why I keep mentioning that phrase, major non-NATO ally is a official terminology that comes from the U.S. government for alliance partners, people who are at a certain level of diplomatic engagement that are considered allies officially. They're not NATO allies, obviously, because they're not from Europe and not part of that organization. But anything outside of that organization that is of critical importance gets that status. And a lot of our partners in South America have been given that status. So what do you think some of the benefits from are for that cooperation with those countries down there?
I think, one, there's just a lot that we share, like in terms of cultures, in terms of values and approaches and priorities, right? And so it's low-hanging fruit in that sense to start there and to look at some of the partners that we can just deepen relationships with. But then also, as I've been trying to you know, elaborate in this brief conversation, is there's a lot more capacity already that we could be tapping into, right? And so I think I would like to see some of the conversations happening in the US about, you know, for example, diversifying our supply chains or diversifying access to critical minerals, which I know has definitely included consideration of vast deposits of these resources in the region. But to think about like that in terms of space as well, right? And so as kind of priorities shift and we figure out what the next phase of the US space program looks like, I think there's a lot of opportunity to tap onto, you know, qualified workforce and you know, actual capability, including a burgeoning kind of commercial sector that could help advance national goals.
Yeah, so I'll just add this, and then because obviously this, I had you on because I knew you were more of a economic and diplomatic focused person. A lot of times we talk a lot about military and civil topics on this podcast, obviously. So I'll just mention, obviously China is a big influence in South America, as you see their space Silk Road and Belt and Road Initiative has been moving into that region, even to Central America, in some degrees. And you've got countries that were, pretty hard charging, leaning toward the Russians and the Chinese from a broader world strategic national security kind of viewpoint. But from a diplomatic and economic and informational side, that's another issue that I think having partners down in the South is important. The Alcantara launch site, for one, as you mentioned, is kind of a big deal. And the reason why we've had, discussions at least for the last 5 or 6 years with Brazil, about Alcantara and use, because a lot of folks are concerned that what if China gets access to that, because it has an even better launch location than even French Guiana at Kourou, which is south of there. And the closer you are to the equator, for those that may not be familiar with this, and you launch, you could pretty much go anywhere in space with a lot less energy requirements to get off the Earth, because you get a little bit of a extra kick from the rotation of the Earth, which is kind of fun when you think about how that works. And then, of course, you've got, for other international forums or for other issues such as space situation awareness, you mentioned, obviously, Peru and Chile, I believe, are building a lot of surveillance capabilities that are very helpful for monitoring polar orbits, especially those that might have some interest in the northern hemisphere or the North American area, and as well as helping with other issues that we might need them for as well. So helping them kind of build their technology up and help them kind of leapfrog a little bit in some of their operational procedures and capabilities, I think, is beneficial to both sides, and both from a military standpoint and a commercial side. And as you said, a lot of the countries down there are kind of overlapping with that. I wanted everyone to have a chance to hear from you, because we don't talk a lot about the diplomatic and about the economic side, such as fishing and food security and things of that sort on here. So I figured it would be great to have you on there. On here. And with that, I would like to just say thanks again to everybody for tuning in. And thank you again, Laura, for being with us today.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Awesome. Well, this is Christopher Stone with Real Space Strategy. Thanks for listening. You've been listening to Real Space Strategy. Real Space Strategy with Christopher Stone is a production of the National Institute for Deterrence Studies. And for more information, see us at our website, thinkdeterrence.com. That's thinkdeterrence.com, our YouTube page, and any of our various social media sites on whichever platform you choose.
The NIDS Podcasting Network.